Well, as I see, everybody's here already. Bernhard to my left or to my right, whatever, not left or right. Bernhard is the Secretary General from Urban Forum. I'm from Sinopress. And the gentleman to my left or right is David Reinhardt. Just for your information, Regina and Mr. Sahesh Shapur. And our beautiful professional moderator is here. In red today, very beautiful, Marie Grüne. So,
Thank you very much.
Marie, the floor is yours now. Well.
The floor is mine. Thanks. Everyone's on time, so I think we can start our discussion. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and especially to our guests and panelists. Welcome to this new episode of the online forum of Urban Forum and in cooperation with Sinopress. Due to the success of the previous episodes, which all have been documented and even published by now, we would like to continue this series because we think that there are still so many important topics we need to talk about, and we want to hear more experts and to discuss with you. First, let me introduce myself. My name is Marie Grüne. Today I have the honor of representing and moderating this forum on behalf of Bernhard Müller for Urban Forum and Helena Chang for Sinopress. So thank you for this opportunity that I can also join your discussion, not even just moderating it. I have been employed by Urban Forum for many years. I've even been the Deputy Secretary General. So I know about the ongoing project, and I'm very firm with this forum, this online forum, and I'm happy. I'm very happy to moderate this discussion today for you. So, as you all know, Urban Forum and Sinopress, they have initiated this discussion or this forum in order to discuss the global challenges that we have to face right now. And today, we're talking about data privacy, data protection, data transfer. I think it's a very important topic right now, as safe data is vital right now. When we just imagine the power of artificial intelligence, the digitalization, the big data, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of going on right now, and we have to prevent us from problems with our data, from theft, from damage. Data is very precious nowadays. So we have four honored panelists today with us. I'd like to briefly introduce them. I would like to start with Mr. Ludwig Sahesh Pur. Now we know how we're going to pronounce it. He is the founder of Pur Consulting, an IT expert, a human board advisor and consultant, and I think lecturer for Shenzhen University Business School, right? Huh? Second panelist is Regina Ross. Welcome.
Thank you.
She's a senior leader of the business development of Typhoon HIL, and SME who focus on digital twins in energy and automotive sector. She leads two startups in the sector last mile in mobility and healthcare. And she has set up the digital transformation for the implementation of the robotic and IA applications in the field of elderly care. So she's also an AI expert.
Well, you have to look for your own future. So if I'm not building me a future I enjoy, I need to find a different way to exit my life.
Thank you very much for that. For the help. So our third panelist is David Keinrath. He's well known in this forum. He's joined many panels by now, and I also know him for many years. He's an energy policy expert, and he's working for Austrian paper industry. Hello, David.
Thank you, Marie.
And we have Bernhard Müller. He's the Secretary General of Urban Forum, but he's here for Mr. Günther Siedl. Mr. Günther Siedl is member of the European Parliament, And unfortunately, he can't be with us today. He has other obligations, but we sent him the questions and he answered it to us in a written form. And Bernhard is going to read it out on behalf of him. So we have a very, very big topic tonight. First, I would like to briefly introduce this topic. The title is Data Transfer Decision Between the EU and the US. Is the European data sufficiently protected this time? So this is our leading question. Let me give you a quick overview. After previous agreements like the Safe Harbor and the Privacy Shield, the EU and the US have created this new protection agreement. It's called the EU-US Data Framework, as I said before. And this agreement was approved by the European Commission in July 2023, so this year, stating that the data of the European citizens processed by certified US companies is protected. That's what it says. So while this sounds very promising, data privacy experts remain very skeptical. There have been numerous complaints about US companies in the EU not adequately prioritizing the security of the data. So some countries have even tightened their data protection regulations, but other governments' decisions are still very unclear. So we don't really know how it's going to develop. So I want to start my first round of questions. I want to start with Mr. Sahesh Pour. So as I mentioned before, the agreement started this year, but it was initially issued last year in March 2022, I guess. So based on this agreement, personal data can flow very completely between Europe to companies from the United States that participate in this framework. So data protectionists doubt that the rights of the European citizens to their data will be effectively protected. So what do you think about this? What are the possible concerns? And what are the concerns when we're talking about this agreement? Mr. Sahesh Pour.
Yes, thank you very much for the introduction. I would like to get the chance to introduce myself firstly, shortly, that people are understanding where I'm coming from and what is my background. That is actually the first important point. Otherwise, answers are not getting into an interpretation or into a relation to the topic of the discussion, which is quite severe and serious, in my opinion. So my background has been... I'm from Germany and acting in Austria and Switzerland and Germany, of course, and studied mechanical engineering. My previous work was power plant activities. So whenever we do a implementation, a commissioning of power plant, you are involved in different multinationals, multi-discipline of data, facilities, stakeholders, interests, countries, which belongs to the framework of data protection, every project frame or every project interest. So when I executed that kind of experience, I figured out that the last 17, 18 years in that field, you have to get an impression of what is the country strategy priorities and how do they approach this project. And that makes sense to understand what are the discussion for today. The questions are more or less to summarize that it cannot, there's no yes or no or a correct or incorrect answer. It's an interpretation answer. And the last 4 years, I was involved in international business relationship from the university in Shenzhen, China. Shenzhen, a very known university with a business school in China. So the Austrian governments are having a strong relationship with Asia, specifically China. So the data interpretation of protection is in the context of the cultural, and that is, I think, one of the most important points. So my answer is, how are laws created? How does the US law formulate or comes to a result in how that the European law went to its status quo, what we know right now about the data protection. So there are different ways how to understand the law. And first, before we get into this question, is actually the way, do we understand the law of the US citizenships or the US legacies in this way that we understand the law from a European point of view? And by doing so, it's initially important to give a fine-tuning of what kind of interest does one government has in terms of their GDP for today and tomorrow. And the same one is valid for the European Union. So you have two different interpretations of it. So what is your value? Where do you come from? So the answer, what you just said, Marie, is not easy to answer, right? So I cannot give you a clear message. So it depends of the perspective of your protection view. How does the interpretation of regulations in US are formulated to a result, and how does the Europeans have an interest of what is their main focus of their protection perspective? So you see, or you get an impression that on two different levels, there's a coming together path. And that's what you can see in the international law, especially in that field, that the US government and the European representative of Ursula von der Leyen and his secretary in that section are trying to negotiate about a power. So it's a power game, the power game of interpretation. So I have to disappoint you a little bit, maybe, to say there's no clear answer to say. There's only an opinion. So whenever international lawyers are fighting in any international court of any Deutungshoheit, the meaning of the framing influence, it's about what kind of interests are behind of it. So these two paragraphs are not clearly understood. What is the power game in this match?
Thank you very much. I totally get what you mean. It's very hard to answer. As you said, two different countries or continents, actually, two different points of view, two different interpretations. I think it will take some time to work things out. So, this will be very important in the future. Thank you very much for your answer. Ms. Ross, I would like to continue with you. This disagreement, can it be considered as a governance device to place the independent fiduciary intermediary between the big tech and human data subjects? I mean, after all, we know that just a small number of companies, they hold the majority of world's data. So what do you think?
Well, what I think and what I can collect from the media needs to be consolidated. First, we have to say the 10th of July decision marks definitively a significant moment in the ongoing global conversation about the data privacy and governance, particular in the context of the big data companies and the protection of individual data subjects, which depend by country, by individual, and by geopolitical situations. The decision adopted by the European Commission aims to address this issue raised by the Court of Justification of the European Union. And this decision of July 2020, I would say, highlighted a lot of concerns in regards of personal data when transferred to the United States. Is it something which is easy to accept? We need to look and understand the implications of that decision as a governance, and we must examine the political and social facts surrounding it, but not only in the European Union, but also in countries which are outside the European Union, if that is the Nordic countries, or if it is China, or if it is Australia, or if we look into specific locations, Germany and Austria as two extremes where both German language is spoken, but different understandings of data protections exist. So in the wake of the Schrems II decision, the European Commission, in my opinion, sought to enhance safeguards for the data transfer to the United States. Mm-hmm. A country which definitively is known as giant dominance and global data reach. So the United States have a certain image. Is it a perception or is it a fact? So the executive order on enhancing safeguards for the United States signals intelligent activities aimed really to ensure that data could not be only accessed by the U.S. intelligence agency to the extent necessary, but also in proportions communicated. Where does that bring us? The key concern, in my opinion, is about the privacy and surveillance in the digital mm-hmm. age. First of all, while there's efforts to take corrective actions and to control it, is it truly possible to protect data, or is there always a possibility to influence, especially by the big tech giants? And is there a chance that we will get data monopoly? So if I take now as two countries as a sample, we do have Germany, and the Germany for sure is a powerhouse where you have a lot of industries which are data driven, and for sure they have a significant stake in that decision process. Are they really understanding what decision they have made here? That can be questioned. And on my understanding of the whole topic, political and social factors play together, and industry comes second in that field. So first of all, every country has to take care when data is transferred to the United States. That for sure will bring up a couple of new legislations for industries when it comes to data centers, when it comes to clouds, open topics to be discussed. Thinking about Germany, we are thinking about one country which is highly, highly administrative and has a strong industry as a background. But on the other hand, we have also China. How is China working with data protection? How open is China in contrast to Germany? For China, I would say we need to take different views, because on one hand, the country is as big as the United States. Maybe it has a completely different vision when it looks to the future of industry. So it's a topic which also shows where is the perspective for the next 20 to 50 years going. And we have to ask us a question, is there a broader conversion about antitrust measures necessary? Do we need to take new regulations into considerations? And how will political changes in regular dynamics impact on the whole scenario? And coming back to the smaller country, the country where this session is today happening, in Austria, they might even take it more laissez-faire and say data is not such a big issue, because only with data we can be successful and taking a giant position in taking industrial leadership, taking medical leadership. If you look to the university in Graz, who got an over 30 million grant last year for enhancing the health sector to be more digital. And if you want to be more digital, you need to have data points. And data points cannot only be country related. Data points have to have a much more global presence. So overall, I feel we have a bigger puzzle to look into. And this big puzzle has several pieces which will create several conversations in the near future. And with a generation change where more openness and more willingness to communicate exist, there's also a new dimension in that field to be expected.
Thank you very much. I totally have to agree. Thank you very much also for bringing up the perspective for China in this context. And yeah, as you said, it always depends on politics and the political situation in each country. So we have to keep that in mind.
And we shouldn't be frightened of speaking of China. We
no.
should be really open that this is maybe a very important sample for us, how a country has converted so quickly over the last few years. Imagine in China, I can order a drink at Starbucks sitting in a park and they will bring it directly to the right bench where I am. If I would even start thinking in Germany or Austria about that, they think I'm living in a visionary world. Looking about the field of last mile and how do I do transportation, also here, data points are important to make it cost effective. And with the wide geographical space of China, they're a lot more open-minded, even looking into the concepts of drones or other vehicles which impacts on the last mile. And any vehicle which is remote controlled means also data points.
I get what you mean, and I think they're also more used to it. Thank you very much. I have a small follow-up question. Do you think data can ever be safe in this context?
I have to engage or connect with what Mr. Saheshpour was saying before, it all depends. There is no fixed answer. What maybe is considered in my environment or in my personal space as safe is considered by others as a violence into privacy or even what was in the past a big issue in the industry, intellectual property. So data can never be safe. In my opinion, there is always a possibility for leakage, either from the system or even by people, whistleblowers.
Thank you very much. That's very clear and understanding. Yeah, this leads me to my next question to Mr. Keinrath. Dear David, a couple of years ago, there was a groundbreaking decision made by the Austrian DSB. For those you don't know, it's the Datenschutzbehörde. And the French DPA, it's the Data Protection Authority, which is basically the same in France, that the use of Google Analytics will be illegal. The Austrian DSB further declared the use of Google's IP anonymization. It's a useless protection measure for data transfer between the EU and the United States. So, Mr. Keinrath, your club, the BSA Favoriten, you invited Mr. Marek Gerhalter from the DSB for a discussion not long ago. What was his opinion related to this issue? Can this agreement be well implemented, or can the European personal data be sufficiently protected this time? What do you think?
Thank you very much, Marie.
A lot of questions.
You actually packaged more than one question into this big question. So I will try to do justice to all of them and keep the time limit for speaking. So we invited Mr. Gerhalter, who is a lawyer at the Austrian Data Protection Authority, to give a speech or basically it was basically a lecture with some Q&A in the end to our club in Favoriten, which is the socialist Association of Socialist Academics, so English translation, BSA. The reason why we invited him was exactly because on the 10th of July, this adequacy decision of the European Commission went into effect. And there is actually a long story behind this adequacy decision of the European Commission, because already there have been two previous frameworks regulating the transfer of data from European companies to the United States and the associated protections for European citizens. And in two cases, in 2015, in the verdict of Schrems 1, and in 2020, in the verdict of Schrems 2, the European Court of Justice, which is the highest court in the European Union, has both times basically stated that the protections for the right to their own data of European citizens are not adequately protected when their data is transferred to the United States. And so Mr. Gerharter, he actually explained this to us in a two-hour lecture, so I will have to condense it. But there are two very important new aspects to these cases, which make them different from other areas of law, right? So the first and most obvious one is that, contrary to other areas of law, data protection is not purely territorial, right? So when you use a service in the United States as a European citizen, the service is not territorially provided inside the European Union. So there arises a question, whose right or whose authority is it to regulate this service? And here we have, of course, the view that if we're giving this service to European consumers, then also the European authorities, basically European Commission, the European Court of Justice, could be the ones to decide if the service is given in a legal way or not. But the other side of the coin is, of course, that those are American companies that are based in the United States, and they want to operate according to American laws. And that is why we have this extraordinary need to coordinate the laws between the two countries, right? And this has happened in a series of agreements. The first one was called Safe Harbor, was passed in the year 2000. And the second one was called Privacy Shield after the first one was lifted by the European Court of Justice decision in 2015. And the second one was also lifted by the European Court of Justice decision in 2020. And the European Court of Justice basically ruled that Article 52 and Article 47 on the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union have not been adequately implemented in this agreement. So Article 52 says it defines the scopes of the individual rights that European citizens have under law. And so they define the scope in the sense of, okay, what can be derogations? Because to roll back one step, the right to privacy is, of course, one of the fundamental rights that European citizens have. And the right to privacy is not absolute, of course. There are some certain situations and reasons where the authorities, under due process and under legal protections, under probable cause and so on, they can limit this right to privacy. And this has to be done in a proportional way. And the question was, the way that the American authorities are collecting all the digital data of European users and analyzing it and not giving European users any information about what they do with their data or what legal consequences it has for them, is this still proportionate under European law? And the second, Article 47, basically talks about the legal standing, right to a fair trial. Do European citizens, which want to know about what the American authorities are doing with their data, or even worse, who have maybe landed on some kind of blacklist and cannot access services anymore, do they have adequate legal protection? Can they turn to the American authorities to, for example, appeal a decision by them? And in both cases, the European Court of Justice has said no. European citizens are not given the same legal standing as American citizens to their data, and therefore has rescinded this these two decisions. These two previous framework agreements, the Privacy Shield and the Safe Harbor. And now we have a third one, which took effect only this year. And the big question that is on all of our minds is, of course, will it be adequate this time? And Mr. Gerharter explained in very much detail that European authorities are actually very restrictive on who, on which countries European companies can transfer the data of European users to. So the list is actually very short. It's only a list of 10 or 12 countries to which European companies can legally transfer the data of European citizens. It's like Switzerland, Norway, the United States, South Korea, Japan, and please forgive me if I cannot name all of the other countries on the list. And so when we compare, for example, with China or with other countries that have very different laws, it's not actually a direct comparison because European companies are not legally allowed to transfer data to Chinese companies. And therefore, it's also not a question if Chinese law gives adequate protection to the rights of European consumers. But American law must give adequate protection to European consumers. Otherwise, those companies should simply not transfer the data. And Mr. Gerharter, was there as an official representative of the Austrian Data Protection Authority. And of course, he cannot second guess the decisions of the European Court of Justice. But after we pushed him a couple of times, he said, well, I would give the third agreement a 70% chance of success. But that was his personal assessment. And we will see in the next 2 years, 2 or 3 years, whether this new agreement will hold up in the European Court of Justice because a new complaint has already been filed.
Thank you. As you said, everything is moving so quickly, so we will see how it's going to develop. But I would like to stick with you thematically and delve deeper into this. You've mentioned the already existing frameworks and now that we have another one. And as I know, you're also a keen observer of today's geopolitics and the digital security. You know that as an NGO, NOYB has been cooperating a lot with the EU in the past years concerning the data flow between the EU and the US, for example. You've mentioned Schrems II and the Privacy Shield. NOYB, it once mentioned in a Spanish and a Luxembourgish DPAs who both closed complaints procedures without commenting on the unlawful use of Google Analytics, even if their relevant websites stopped Google Analytics. So why is that so? What is the force behind that?
So yes, NOYB, which is an abbreviation for none of your business, is the creation of Max Schrems.
Yeah.
And Max Schrems, of course, is an Austrian lawyer and Austrian citizen who has a long history in protecting privacy and bringing cases to court. And that's why the two cases in the European Court of Justice were called Schrems 1 and Schrems 2, because he was the claimant. And when you say he cooperated with the European Commission, I would take that with a hint of, like, with a grain of salt, because I think he has been actually a thorn in the side of the European Commission, which has been questioning their decisions and asking
that.
Very important and real questions about their decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
The complaints about Google, I don't want to go into too much of the technical details, because this would take basically too long. But
no, it's your opinion.
Too late, David, too late.
Yeah, exactly. So, but what the Luxembourgish Data Protection Authority basically said in their complaint, in the reply to the complaint, is that they have no way of enforcing the law on these two entities which were concerned, which used Google Analytics, because they were not territorially in the European Union. And therefore, the complaint has been thrown out. They basically said, we don't have jurisdiction over these companies because they're outside of the European Union. And this is exactly contrary, actually, to the provisions in the General Data Protection Regulation, in the GDPR of the European Union, because they say whoever provides digital services to European citizens in the EU automatically must comply with the provisions of the GDPR. So they have basically opened a new chapter, a new question, after the European Court of Justice has already laid down that the continuous use of Google Analytics without the consent of the user is illegal. The National Data Protection Authority said, well, that may well be, but we have no way of enforcing it. So this will probably go again to the Court of Justice of the European Union. There is, of course, a legal procedure around it. Even if the Data Protection Authority throws out the complaints, the claimants, European citizens, of course, always have the possibility to turn to a normal court and have it reviewed. And if as a Luxembourgish or a Spanish court review the decision of the Data Protection Authority, they will automatically have to turn to the Court of Justice of the European Union. This procedure takes probably years, and it's always ex post. So if an infringement on your rights has happened, years later, a court will determine whether this was actually lawful or not. Which in the individual case as a user doesn't really help you very much. But it's very important for the development of the legal system, because in the future we want it to work better, right?
Thank you very much for your insights. I think it's like in the answers before, it's different interpretation. I think these complexities of these issues are coupled to these interpretations and the limitation of resources, maybe. And this could contribute to that. Thank you. I would like to come back to Mr. Saheshpour. Earlier this year, the Data Protection Commission in Ireland, the DPC, announced the conclusion of an inquiry into the processing carried out by WhatsApp Ireland Limited. WhatsApp, a social media format we all use. And in connection with the delivery of its WhatsApp service in which it was fined, WhatsApp Ireland, 5.5 million euro, I guess. But in cases with Meta or Google, it got rejected by the DPC. Why is that so? WhatsApp compared to the others.
What are questions? Because we cannot answer that. However, we can interpret it that most probably there are other power interests in the game. So what I could see there is why the penalty one company to the other one makes it clear for the international business to understand or to get a feeling or an impression of what is behind of this finding on this law. As we learned and understood today, is the law or the data protection is not done for the lawyers or by the lawyers only. It's about much more. So to bring this discussions into a real value for the people's life, we have to understand, to make it easy to understand why they did that. So different fines or different penalties is only a perspective for the outside or the outsiders and not the insiders. As an outsider, if you're not involved in the IT world or have an impression of the quality, you think and you might interpret that 5.5 million is a fine, which is a huge amount. For the insiders, 5.5, it's a daily cash flow revenue. So again, bringing to the discussion to a context, the interpretation and the communication is important from inside and out for outside, mm-hmm. and from outside to inside. Please explain me what is 5.5 million euros for WhatsApp? And what is 5.5 million for Google? It's a joke and everybody are aware of it, right? So behind all these numbers is a motivation. What could be the motivation? That is interesting. So if you're talking in this urban forum about development of a city, development of a society, city, development of a competitive advantage, you need to give them a brief of activity to keep them alive and to generate more energy in a development business direction. So you should not try to kill companies that they're not able to move on. They should be still alive and having some hope to do so, right? And from the outside, the understanding is they, international law in US or in Europe, they were fighting hardly to getting any commitment or a conclusion so that the outside expert or the not expert world get an impression that we're fighting for something, for a target. And the inside world understand that we are depending on the US government and the international cooperation with the European Union. So that is something which is not easy to understand because it's abstract, right? So whenever you understand the way how IT works or should work, you should understand IT and companies who are working with that for their own national benefits would could contribute to a development in the GDP increase and to be on the track to be involved in the discussions. So the fines or the different fines penalties is again something which have to be interpreted in the context of the address of the address of the companies of concern. So in that terms, I would answer it. The question what you just asked is more in what kind of concerns and the interpretation of the company is working with this continent and what is behind of it. So it has more answers to figure out. It's not a penalty or punish a company. It's more, hey, we did something and we try to give more substance arguments for our fighting positions, right? That's where maybe 5.5 million does sound for the outside experts at the high value, and for the inside experts, it's more than a laugh.
Thank you very much. And as before, different interpretation, different levels, the inside and the outside. Thank you very much. So the next question, it's addressed to Mr. Günther Siedel. As I said before, he's not here with us tonight. He's busy with other meetings and other obligations, but he answered the question to us and sent it to us in a written form, and Bernhard Müller, he's going to read it out for us. But first, let me read the question out for you again, and I'm going to read it because I don't want to miss any information. The General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR, as we've heard before, it has two principles. It recognizes that individuals own and control their personal data in perpetuity, leading to three critical privacy rights, namely the right to explicit consent, it's the data opt-in, the right to be forgotten, it's the data erasure, and the portability, it's the data transfer, basically. And it also includes data security mandates against privacy breaches through unauthorized access. So do you think the agreement from the 10th July, the agreement we're talking about, is in total in accordance with the GDPR principles. Please, Bernard, we want to hear the answer from Mr. Cito.
Yes, thank you so much, Marie. It's my pleasure to answer on behalf of Günther Siedl. He's a member of the European Parliament, as mentioned. On 10th July 2023, the European Commission published a new privacy framework. This is now provisionally in force until it has been reviewed by the European Court's ECJ. This provides a new basis for the transfer of personal data from the EU to the US. Following the declaration by the European Court of Justice of its predecessor, Privacy Shield 2020, to be invalid due to serious data protection deficiencies. The existence of a basis is very important in itself, as it requires clear and strict rules for the handling and transfer of personal data. The protection of privacy is enshrined fundamental right, and since the General Data Protection Regulation, the so-called GDPR, the Union has a responsibility to ensure that European data is treated and protected globally according to European criteria. If company based in the US process European data, it must be protected according to European criteria.
Thank you very much, Bernhard. And yeah, special thanks to Mr. Siedl for still giving us this important insight and points, despite he's that busy. So yeah, I think it's also what Mr. Keinrath said. It's a fundamental right, but it's limited when it comes to overall security, basically. Thank you very much. I want to come back to Mrs. Ross as an IT expert.
Ross.
It's always when you're in that English. Ross.
So it's Regina Ross. If we speak
Regina Ross. German, okay.
Or if we say it English, it's Regina Ross.
Regina
Very
Ross.
Very soft, but not Ross. I'm not a horse.
Okay. Regina Ross.
fun as well.
It's when you're in that English accent, I guess. So sorry. I want to talk with you about AI as an expert. So artificial intelligence. London just finished hosting the AI Safety Summit on the 1st and 2nd of November this year. It's the first of that kind. And 28 countries and regions, including the EU, they signed the very much praised Bletchley Declaration. And the EU said that it is in the process of passing an AI bill, which aims to develop a set of principles for regulations, as well as bringing in rules for specific technologies such as live facial recognition, for example. Are we facing a so-called double-edged sword of AI safety and digital security? I think AI will likely continue to concern us for a long time. What is your opinion on that?
This is a very interesting question because it's also a topic which is extremely recent. And if you look with 28 mm-hmm. countries, this is not even about one third of the countries globally. We are here talking of a minor group of countries, but mm-hmm. globally very important group of countries who made a contribution. For sure, there's a growing global recognition of the need of coordinated efforts to ensure that the AI technology is developed and developed safely. However, the co-influence of AI safety and human digital security needs to be presented in a what I would call a double-edged sword, raising several important questions and considerations at the same time. As David already mentioned, the Bletchley Declaration demonstrates a clear commitment to establish a set of principles for the regulations of AI. And this is for sure mandatory if we want to work on very, how you say, forceful and with the right acceleration in time. So this is a very positive step, in my opinion, to ensure that AI technologies are developed with focus on the ethical consideration, the fairness, transparency, and at the same moment, also global consideration. But the devil is in the details. What specific details will be outlined in the AI bill, and how will they be reinforced? How will these regulations, and I'm asking here questions and not giving you answers, adapt to the rapid pace of technology advancement and the emerging AI applications? It's very clear that previously a car development took you about 10 years. Now a car development may be 24 months. So it is all accelerated by the impact of AI and the quality of AI. And that what implies to a car also applies to the medical care aspects. So like facial recognition technology, mentioned as one of the specific technologies to be regulated, because we need that in the forensic, but we also need it in the medical segment, requires a very strong regulation to ensure that we have a solid base for judge. And that, of course, created also some controversy, I would say, because it's a kind of private invasion. So while we have regulations which are necessary to protect the human rights, we also have to ask what safeguards will be put in place to have a balanced security with the individual privacy and, on the other hand, the civil liberties. And here again, we have different geopolitical scenarios to look in. And I like my extreme country, so I like to also bring up here the country of China again, because China is for sure in the global AI landscape very paramount. It was one of the countries which has been the leader in AI development. Think about the technical giants like Alibaba or Tencent, I don't know if I pronounce it correctly, as one of the forefronts in that field. And their approach to AI safety and the digital security involves a very unique blend of state oversight and, at the other hand, the rapid innovation part. So a balance has to be found in that field. And then you have to ask that question, how does the Pledgerary Declaration align with China's perspective on AI safety? And that what we might expect from a European lens. So can global standards be established? Are they inclusive to Chinese advanced thinking in that field? Or do we here have a high expectation in respect of civilians and privacy, and we need to work a little bit more open-minded? So that was one thought. And China is very much highly in the focus of many. But if I, from my personal experience, because I have a certain part of my heart also in Australia, and if I look Australia in that field, then Australia is more an emerging market, not as advanced as China. However, they will be a crucial player in that field because they have the natural resources, and Australia contributes with lithium and other natural resources that we even can live in that digital world of clouds and data centers and technology. Because without the raw material, you would not even be able to have data stored in the different clouds, as well as work on this high level of data collection parts. So in my opinion, Australia has also learned a lot in that field, that they can play an important role, because they see in different fields the data is important. When it comes to transportation of material to other countries, and with that, they also influence the prices of the stock market, because slow transportation high impact on the stock market price. Fast transportation, of course, to China, better impact on the pricing in that field. So again, the question is, will we have a harmonization or will we even create potential conflicts if we ask for a strong harmonization of all the data protection in the different geographies at the moment? And I think data is in many different fields important, and one which is from the industrial point strong to my heart, which you also saw already in the introduction of where I spent my time, is the field of healthcare. For sure, there we have not only the element of data collection, we have also the element of curing people's sickness or making an impact that certain sicknesses are delayed, like having a good knowledge about dementia or Alzheimer can help to keep people longer in the daily normal surrounding of family and friends. And as such, addressing AI safety and human digital security is a continuous evolving process because we also have to handle data protection different if we want to work more coherent with people. However, there is another part which I shortly want to address. This is a topic of the ethic implementations, because some people from religious regions and geographical regions have the desire to live in a certain closed environment. Will that help them in the future? It is a different question. So having a bias is a question. Is it allowed? But we have a diverse society, and that's why we have to be a lot more open-minded. Ethical concerns will maintain, and especially when it looks, when we are looking to the global scale. However, I would like to address one point, which for me is quite important, because if we come, as companies or as individuals rely too much on the AI prediction or information, then we can also create problems. It could lead to machinery malfunctions, which leads to injury of workers. Also, when there is wrong models used in the field of healthcare, that could cause misdiagnostics. It could mean that we are taking too much of a pharmaceutical for people. And at the end of the day, we harm the human's life. So at the end, AI and safeguard needs to be very strongly balanced, because there is a field which we hadn't addressed today so much, which is the financial sector. If there's wrong or misleading information coming out with financial recommendations or wrong credit checks, a whole industry could be jeopardized. So overall, I would say the AI governance has a global field in the way how it should be addressed, because the problems are similar in the different countries. So a double sword edge in AI safety, human digital security, it will maintain, but it will be in our interest to have a better life and at the same time a more sustainable life. One aspect I haven't addressed today is the question of whatever we do in AI, has it an impact on the zero carbon, and how do we contribute to that? But I will not jump into that subject now too much, but maybe David would like to discuss it also from the angle of Australian paper a little bit later, because if we have no trees anymore, we have no nature, and it's all a compromise which we have to find in that field. And AI can also have a misleading or a positive impact in that field.
Thank you very
true,
much.
Regina.
I think to sum it up, I have to agree, it's always about the balance. AI has a lot of advantages and a lot of risks at the same time. It's always about how we use it. And but we still have to be open-minded about it. It's always up to us how we use it. Thank you very much. Time is running. I want to not close our discussion, but I want to point out our last question to Mr. Seal. So Bernard is again reading out the answer for us. And then maybe we have some more time to sum everything up and have a little discussion about the different points you said before. So Bernhard or Günther, it's a general question, but it's also very hard to answer like the others before, of course. What advice would you offer to organizations seeking to enhance their data security and privacy measures in the light of these developments we've mentioned?
So, sorry.
Yes, now we can hear you.
Yes, yes. The microphone was switched off. Before I would like to answer these questions, please let me give some remarks. Data transfers are a central component of the global economy across all sectors and also in science. However, the content is personal data and sensitive data, the protection of which is a central fundamental right. We want to create a legally sustainable basis in which all interests and fundamental rights are fully taken into account. This gives companies legal certainty when they transfer personal data between the EU and the USA. Small and medium-sized enterprises in particular could benefit from the elimination of the need for case-by-case audits in future. However, it remains to be seen whether the new regulation will last in the long term and sufficiently protect the fundamental rights enshrined in primary law in the European Charter of Fundamental Rights. It remains to be seen whether the data privacy framework represents a legally robust regulation that adequately protects the fundamental rights of European citizens. My recommendation, as Günther, of course, would be to focus on privacy by design and also to send a clear signal to citizens that fundamental rights are being respected. Data saving instead of getting more and more would be my advice in all directions. I would recommend citizens to think more about the fact that is their data and not to handle it lightly. And I would recommend legislators to make good legislations from the beginning, not only when the ECJ had to repeal regulations due to incompatibility with fundamental rights.
Thank you very much, Bernhard or Günther. I think that puts it in a nutshell. Does anybody wants to add something to that? I think everything is said quite clear, and you all gave us a lot of information and a lot of insights today. Thank you very much for all of your answers and your comments, and generally David. Speaking. Oh, David. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I was too slow to raise my hand when you asked.
It was a bad connection. It's fine, David.
Also, from all the very interesting answers and analysis that we've heard now, I would like to come back to two points which actually you stated in the questions to me. Because first of all, this whole field is very new, and it is a perfect like textbook example of the legal system adapting to a new technology and to a new social reality. And second of all, it has, of course, geopolitical implications in the sense that the companies and the countries which are home to the companies which are involved in AI, digital platforms and so on, they have unprecedented power over their users, which often sit in other jurisdictions and in other countries. I would argue they have a degree of power. So to break it down, for example, if you're a Facebook user or Instagram user, an American company which sits in a different jurisdiction on a different continent has a degree of power over your personal life, which simply has not been the case any time before in history. And this degree of power they don't only have hold over your digital life individually, but over entire populations. And this, of course, has an echo in geopolitics. If American companies can influence the populations of other countries, and this is just an example with American companies, the company may as well sit in another jurisdiction. We're in a new reality. And I would argue that we have not really adapted to this new reality yet. The users have not adapted in their habits, and the legal system have not adapted in their laws. There are first, like, small steps in this direction, for example, in the European Union, but also in other jurisdictions. And it is a big learning experience. So what would I like to highlight there? I would like to highlight that this learning experience will necessarily involve like a process of trial and error. We have to find out what works and what doesn't work. And I would be very cautious about recommendations to have single frameworks for the whole world. And I think it's actually a very good way to have this fragmentation because it provides for experimentation. To figure out in one jurisdiction what works well and what doesn't work well, rather than having the damage and the negative consequences of inefficient legislation strike the whole world because they're all part of the same agreement. So in Europe, we have the cautionary principle, which basically is an approach to say, well, everything that could potentially be harmful first has to be checked before it is allowed. Whereas in the US, they have the exact opposite principle. They basically allow things and then they have legal redress. And companies which damage the rights of individuals can be sued. And both of these systems have their justification. I think when it comes to very, very important, like, harmful material, especially to the lives of people. As a European, I'm definitely in favor of the precautionary principle. I'd rather have the harm prevented before it's done rather than afterwards and then compensate with money. But this is very important. It's a learning experience and countries have to work together. And I have seen or I've read and also heard tonight a lot of remarks that are critical to China, and China holds the key in this area. It is one of the largest developers of artificial intelligence, data platforms. They hold a lot of knowledge and a lot of intelligence in this area, and we must not block China out. We must involve China in order to develop better solutions. So, yeah, from very narrow legalistic viewpoint to a broad viewpoint of what that actually means. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you. And I think that's a good summary. We all have to work together, not against each other, in this topic, in this field. And yeah, I think that's a very good point that we have to keep in mind. It's a big experiment, generally speaking. Yeah, we don't know how it will develop. And the frameworks will change, of course, as the AI and everything is going on. So we all always have to keep that in mind. And yeah, I think that's a good summary, actually. Does anybody want to add something again?
Yeah, slightly, yes. Actually, I would like to contribute to something which David says just right now in the last two sentences, which grabbed my attention. In the last 10 years, I was working. I make a small example so that you can follow up what I wanted to explain or make a relation to that. Whenever you build any complicated facility or engine or any plant or any complex infrastructure in Europe, you have the authority of the QM, quality management auditor. And the quality management auditor from Europe or from Germany or Switzerland or Austria, let's call the center of Europe, they have somehow an approach how they assess complicated stuff, right? So how does the auditor audit a power plant from the perspective of the Europeans? And how does an auditor does it from the US perspective? And what David just said reminds me to that learning 12 years ago. I was getting to know to my colleague in Canada and US, and we both have to have the job function to audit a plant. And the way how we approach that work, where from the European perspective, we building every facility so that an accident will not happen. So these parts of the building are not be explosive. So fatalities can happen. That was the mind starting movement of how something is designed to, right? So the European perspective is design something that it doesn't fuck up in the end when it's operating. And the US perspective, the outfit comes from that philosophy. So everybody has a philosophy of work, and the philosophy of the US guys where plan and protect something. So if it would be explosive, what you can do afterwards. So there's two different philosophies coming to a point of a certain specific sectors, and they have to negotiate the way how they fulfill the targets. And coming to the relation to data protection and data implementation, where maybe exactly the interesting analogy between US and Europe. So the Europeans trying to work with a high-end engineering IT protection solution, nothing will happen. And the US guys come from, hey, let's learn on behalf of our example we were growing. I hope you understand what I would like to explain with that picture, because that shows that in project that future investments have a possibility to negotiate with the future behavior. So how does a company or a country behaves if you would like to grow with them? So you can make any statements or trends in that field. And interestingly, is China a huge player, and we should involve them. I'm happy that David, you say that. I'm very happy that you say that. The involvement of countries is the only key that we learn from different cultures. It's not the way that we learn by ourselves only. It's the inclusion of different perspectives, and that's why China has a huge potential to grow with them. So we should have the mindset of growth by interact with international people, interact with international NGOs, with country mindsets. Whatever, what kind of mindset you have, you can gain additionally if you work cooperative. So in the same way of data protection, it's only in the good sense of people's benefit. I hope I did not over-exaggerate my example with this picture. I think you get what I would like to describe, right?
It's fine. It's again, it's different nations, it's different interpretations and behaviors, but inclusion is the key, as you said. You know, we have to involve everyone and work together and involve every nation, basically. Thank you very much pointing that out again. So time is running. Thank you very much for all of your answers and the comments. You have all mentioned various points and challenges we have to face, and we all have to challenge the data security and privacy situations. With all of that information and your comments, I may kindly ask Bernhard to, on behalf of Urban Forum and Sinopress, to provide a brief summary for us of this discussion overall.
Yes, thank you so much. My microphone is switched on now. So, dear Marie and Helena, distinguished guests, the time has passed quickly, so I want to give only a small summary and some remarks. today at the 8th International Online Forum, organized by Sinopress and Urban Forum, we addressed a topic that has not yet been the focus of our attention. And with this topic, it is important to know the history. 3 years ago, the European Court of Justice, ECJ, overturned the current Privacy Shield Data Protection Agreement between the European Union and the USA on the grounds that the level of data protection in the USA did not meet European standards. With the EU Commission's adequacy decision, a new agreement has now come into force that is intended to provide legal certainty for transatlantic data transfers. The EU Commission has adopted a new adequacy decision for the EU-US data privacy framework. The decision stipulates that the United States guarantees an adequate level of protection comparable to that of the European Union for personal data transferred from the EU to US companies within the new framework. But data protection organizations have already announced legal action against the new agreement. Critics believe that the new data protection agreement is largely a copy of the failed Privacy Shield Agreement. The protection of sensitive data is a central fundamental right. There is a praise for the new regulation, but also some strong criticism. From today's perspective, it is not yet clear whether a long-term solution to the problem has been found, but it is legally strong. And today, we heard one very interesting question. Who has the power of interpretation? Also, it was mentioned that we have to think global. We further discussed if data can be secure at all. And of course, different actors have different targets. So it was mentioned that it should be and could be very important to involve big global players like China. I would like to thank our partner Sinopress for their consistently professional work and preparation of all the forums. Helena Chang recently celebrated a great success with the publication of the book On the Tide. I would like to congratulate her once again. Helena, all the best and congrats. Thanks also to the charming and skillful moderation by Marie Grüner and, of course, to all the participants. All the best and hope to see you soon. It was a great pleasure to be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a wonderful round of discussion, really. A lot of profundity, a lot of insights and open-mindedness. Thank you all for the participation. From my side, have a good evening and see you soon again, hopefully. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.